stood on the veranda. You can see so much, you know, from here why they wanted to build their home and museum here. It's quite idyllic, isn't it? It was built between 1897 and 1901. It's interesting because it makes it one of the very last Victorian buildings. It was designed by John Frederick Fogarty, who was an Irish architect who moved to Bournemouth in the 1880s. Not an architect of national note, and I think there's probably, you know, good reason for that. I think that they wanted to have a great deal of say of what the building would look like. And when you look around it, you can see their personality stamped on it and its eccentricness. It's not, you know, a particularly architect style that comes to mind. It's just, you know, the jumble of things that they wanted to make. It's been closed for 2 years. A big conservation and restoration project is just coming to an end. It's suffered being on the clifftop. It's taken a lot of sea air. It wasn't particularly well built in places, and a lot of the structure has corroded, and all the paintwork inside was getting a bit run down. We're right in the middle of the dining room, and you can see that it's a very rich room, and the wallpaper is an embossed red, which was meant to imitate Spanish leather wall coverings. I mean, the whole design of the room looks back to earlier English styles, particularly the ceiling and the fireplace, which was to create a sense of history about the place. But it is very theatrical, it's not very showy. By the fireplace there are the four saints of the British Union with the national emblems and coats of arms. And then also on the bay windows and around the house were a pane of glass representing each country of the British Empire as it was then. And then looking around the curving, you can see the wonderful peacocks, the rich gold, the fruit, you know, the poppies, all that's been revealed. And looking up, there's a triangle left of area that remains uncleaned, so visitors can see, you know, what work has actually gone on here, and it's quite incredible. See, this stood in the drawing room, which is a very yellow gold room, and the doors are from a Florentine palazzo which they took when they visited Florence, and actually based the whole of the design around it. And you can see where it's all been regilded. But it's quite incredible. Everything's yellow and gold, and again the papered ceiling embossed in white and yellows. We only had a little sample of the wallpaper left, and it was copied and screen printed. The effect is quite amazing, really. You know, there's so many colour schemes in places like Frogmore. Only have about 10, 11 colours. But here has 135 different colours throughout the house. Every room is different. Each room has a different style, which I think makes for a very interesting building. When we walk into the main hall, you can see everywhere in the stained glass the signs of the heavens. I mean, as you come in and down the main stairs, there's an absolutely wonderful dome which has comets, you know, stars, bats, owls. You can see the setting and rising sun with the four winds blowing, as well as the 12 signs of the zodiac. The big balcony is what was called Scott's Baronial, and that was actually very popular with the Scottish Nouveau Riche, in which Annie was, as the English Nouveau Riche tended to prefer Italian and French models, so this house is really a mixture of the two. Now we're walking into the morning room, which is completely different again, because it's actually got the decoration that was done in the 1940s, because it suffered bomb damage when the East Cliff was bombed. And so it was repainted by an artist, Anna Zinkeisen, who actually designed the whole decoration of the room. And so it was felt that rather than trying to restore just part of it back to how the Russell Coates had it, and the ceiling, how Anna Zinkeisen, it didn't seem very consistent. So the decision was made to make the whole room as it was done by Anna Zinkeisen in the 1940s. And the original is preserved under the lining paper, so nothing's been destroyed. I mean, it's really quite over the top. It's interesting that somebody actually came to the museum who'd helped Anna Zinkeisen paint it, and there is a little inscription on the ceiling that they'd left. they wanted to link themselves with aristocracy, particularly Merton, and in his autobiography had included the photograph of Merton College, Oxford, which had nothing to do with his name, and also they had a stained glass window of the Dukes of Bedford with their motto, Que sera, sera. You could say with the Lord Russells, and again, actually had nothing to do with Russell Kurtz, I'm afraid, but there was that linking to try and create this aristocratic feel. Of course, they didn't quite get it right. But that's the interesting thing. I mean, they created something entirely new. They kind of aped or copied aristocrats, but created something much to their own taste. And actually, I think a lot of it would have been seen as quite gauche and vulgar, but it's a fabulous, really, fantasy house. This is the Mikado's room. Looking at the stained glass windows again, you can see it shows the sun rising in the east. And the land of the rising sun, of course, is Japan. And this room was dedicated to their Japanese tour. You can see there's a picture of the Mikado and his wife. Japanese coat of arms has been painted. But also there are some of the places that they visited in Japan, and also represent some of the objects that they have in the collection, like the cockerel on the drum. And also they had a temple gate, or torii, which was in the garden. In fact, this overlooks the Japanese part of the garden. Now, you can just see lying there a huge granite Japanese lantern. And the bridge, the Japanese bridge. Well, this is the Red Room, which has a wonderful bay which looks out onto Bournemouth Bay. And you can see the canopy from here quite well as well. Wallpaper is actually going to be put back. It's just got lining paper on now, but that again has been, you know, reproduced from original samples. And as you can see in the stenciling there, there's the thistle and the rose. But going from here, we're going to a very odd part of the house, which is the Moorish alcove. So it's immediately going to really into darkness from the main windows towards the main hall. And you can see that it's lit by this incredible Moorish lamp, which is in this big glass dome. And in fact, it was based on the design, their visit to the Alhambra. And we're going now into the boudoir, which is extremely pink. It was actually a bit yellow before, but with the wallpaper, but after it was removed, it revealed this wonderful pink finish. And looking, you can, in the bay here, again, an incredible view. A boudoir traditionally was where the lady of the house would entertain and take tea with visitors. And this is an exception, a very showy room. I mean, there's Tynecastle frieze in pink and white embossed. But it's nice to see it now, before we move the furniture back, through the Moorish alcove. And this time, if that was her own room, this was his room, which again set back away from the south-facing front of the house and is much darker and gloomier and much more masculine, I think. And you see from the wallpaper here, it's almost very gold and bronze effect. This is produced by a company, Tynecastle, who did most of the papers in the house. And you can see the thistle and rose. I mean, it's predominantly thistle in this room, apart from above the fireplace. But it was a showroom. It's really to show off this sort of marvellous collection of art and objects and furniture. In a darker room like this, I think the darkness helped them to achieve that. This is the Irving room, which was originally a bedroom, became a library. And then actually was dedicated to Sir Henry Irving. And in fact, if you see painted on the ceiling around the light, it's in loving memory of our dear friend Sir Henry Irving. And in fact, you know, Irving, the great tragic actor of the 19th century, who were friends with the Russell Kurtz, and in fact put a lot of money into some of their theatrical ventures, which were often flops. And you can see painted on the ceiling a lot of plays that he was most famous for. The Bells there, Corporal Brewster. Merton wrote, there's an altercation with Iago, so realistically and terribly intense that it almost made our hair stand an end. And in the scene where he smothers Desdemona, he left such a terrible impression on our minds that we couldn't sleep during the night. On the following day, I told him the effect it had upon us, and he smilingly replied that he had never had a greater compliment played to his acting. And that's very, very typical of the kind of things that they wrote about, and they were really big admirers. On this wall, there was a bust of Irving, which is going to go back, and the whole of this lettering went around, really. devoted to their friend whose generosity, benefactions and kindly acts were boundless. They were sending out big messages when they had this house designed about who they were. They provided a wonderful museum. They gave the museum and collections to the people of Bournemouth in 1905, and it's a terrific bequest, which makes it very interesting today.